Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com and FukushimaUpdate.com, and it is the 28th of February 2012 for me here in Japan. It's still the 27th where I'm joined on the line from the United States by Paul Gunter, the director of the Reactor Oversight Project at BeyondNuclear.org. Mr. Gunter, it's great to have you on the program. Thank you for joining us today.
Hey, thank you for the opportunity.
All right, well, let's start with a little bit about yourself. This is your first time on the program, so perhaps you can tell us about your background and how you came to start working with Beyond Nuclear.
Okay. Well, I have been an environmental activist since 1975 in the area of nuclear power. I was first engaged in this issue as the result of a nuclear power plant that was proposed on the Seabrook, New Hampshire coastline, the construction of two 1150 megawatt reactors in a sensitive salt marsh estuary. And we basically got started with an environmental movement because we didn't believe that nuclear power was either cheap, safe, or clean. And we were very concerned about the security issues that it raised. And we saw essentially that the regulatory deck was stacked in a promotion of nuclear power rather than an interest in public health and safety and the environment. So we formed a coalition called the Clamshell Alliance, and through the principles of nonviolent direct action, we opposed the construction of the Seabrook nuclear power plant, which included public education, petitioning our government, but also direct action through site occupation. And so from 1976 to 1990, we were engaged in a series of direct actions, public educations that used nonviolent direct action, civil disobedience. And over 4,000 people were arrested as a result of criminal trespass in front of the Seabrook nuclear power plant construction site. But what it actually did was coined the No Nukes movement in the United States and fostered the anti-nuclear movement on the nuclear power issue. And shortly after that, I became engaged in working down in Washington, D.C. And so I've been here in the Washington, D.C. area since 1991. I worked for 16 years with a group called Nuclear Information and Resource Service. And as of 2007, we began the work here at Beyond Nuclear.
Well, bringing it into our current context, the nuclear issue that's foremost on everyone's mind around the world, and certainly for us here in Japan, is Fukushima and what we're facing at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant in Japan's northeast. And something that that perhaps people don't realize is that the design of the Fukushima Daiichi plant is a boiling Mark 1 boiling water reactor, is exactly similar to a lot of reactors that are in the United States. I believe 23 or 24 such reactors exist. But perhaps we can talk a little bit about Fukushima Daiichi and how the design of the plant itself contributed in some ways to what's happening there.
Well, early on in our work on the nuclear power issue in Seabrook, which was these Westinghouse pressurized water reactors, we became aware of the Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant in southeastern Vermont, just across the Connecticut River from New Hampshire. And so we began educating ourselves about the power plant that was actually operating in our area, and this was the General Electric Mark I boiling water reactor. So we quickly became aware of the fact that while we were concerned about the power plant that was under construction over on the New Hampshire seacoast, the imminent threat we became aware of was a whole host of problems that were identified in the 1970s from this General Electric Mark I boiling water reactor design. These are the boiling water reactor, basically, as it says, it boils water directly in the pressure vessel, which then directs dried steam through a turbo generator and then condenses that steam and returns it back to the reactor where the cycle begins anew. These are General Electric built these reactors in the 1960s vintage design was offered as a competitive edge to the nuclear industry, where GE said these could be built quicker and cheaper than these large pressurized water reactors like Combustion Engineering, Westinghouse, and Babcock and Wilcox. So the what we were most aware of at that time was that in 1976, three General Electric engineers, Dale Bridenbaugh, Gregory Hubbard, and Richard Miner, publicly resigned their prestigious positions in management at GE because they said that the GE Mark I was not a quality product, and in fact, it was a very dangerous design. And they pointed to a whole host of issues that included, basically the fact, the fundamental fact is that the GE Mark I has what's called a pressure suppression containment system, which is the reactor sits in a 90-foot dry well structure. It's a steel-walled structure that looks like an inverted light bulb. And the reactor sits inside that, and then that is surrounded by an 18-foot diameter hollow donut that's connected with 10 large diameter pipes. In that hollow donut is a 1 million gallons of water. And the whole pressure suppression containment design is that in the event of a severe accident and the initiation of the emergency core cooling system, all that steam, radioactivity, the hydrogen gas, the shock wave coming out of a nuclear power plant is to be directed into that dry structure and then routed through these pipes into this donut, which then essentially is supposed to quench the steam and scrub the radioactivity inside that million-gallon water tank. But quickly identified was not only by these GE engineers, but by earlier documents from the Atomic Energy Commission through Dr. Stephen Anauer, who as early as 1972 had said that this design, the pressure suppression containment design of the Mark I, was highly likely to fail in the event of a severe accident, primarily because the volume of the structure is very small. In fact, these are like 1/6 the size of these large diameter or these large volume containments like Three Mile Island, the pressurized water reactor. So these were going to fail very quickly, according to Dr. Stephen Anauer, who was the top safety officer at the Atomic Energy Commission, and then the concerns of these three GE engineers, and then by 1986 it was again confirmed by now the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, by Dr. Harold Denton, who's now who was then the director of nuclear reactor regulation at NRC, in an industry conference, who said that if there was a severe accident at a Mark I, that there was a 90% chance of failure of the containment system. And as a result, rather than shut these Mark I's down, because of a substandard, a major substandard piece of a structure, namely the containment system, the NRC collaborated with the nuclear industry and General Electric and what was called the Boiling Water Reactor Owner Group, and they developed a fix, which was a what called the direct torus vent system or the hardened vent, which would provide operators with a venting system on the containment to essentially open the containment temporarily rather than lose it completely and permanently as the result of a severe accident through overpressurization, principally, or you know, through the collection of hydrogen gas. So in 1989, the nuclear industry was provided with an opportunity to voluntarily install these hardened vents on the Mark I containment systems. And I emphasize the fact that this option was provided to the industry voluntarily, which meant that it did not go through a formal licensing proceeding, which would have brought in the ability of the U.S. public to intervene legally in public hearings and to be able to discover the actual documentation of the hardened vent installation and bring in its own experts to evaluate and critique both the wisdom of venting containment and also the adequacy of this particular design. But more of concern, because this was a voluntary initiative, the NRC did not have to inspect it, nor was the design held through an enforcement policy to a consistent design. So what happened was essentially the U.S. industry installed a design that was inconsistent across the various nuclear power stations. And in fact, one of the Mark I reactors, the one in upstate New York at Fitzpatrick, right on Lake Ontario, basically did not install the hardened vent system, but were provided with a deviation and were able to install, rely upon a ductwork system that was already in the plant that was to be used for venting purposes for routine operations, so that the atmosphere of the containment could be purged for workers to get in there and do work and maintenance or during refueling operations. But they were credited with this same ductwork system for severe accident conditions, and which would basically allow for the system to be destroyed by overpressurization accident and blow doors off in the auxiliary building next to the reactor building, and thereby open a pathway to vent high pressure. So, we have basically since 1972 known that Mark I was not only prone to failure, but had installed the option for control room operators to deliberately defeat containment in order to vent these accidents. And our concern has always been that there was never any real scrutiny, there was never really any inspection, nor was there any way to enforce this industry on what they actually, you know, the adequacy and the wisdom of what they installed. Well, Tokyo Electric Power Company took this same documentation in 1989 and began installing the same hardened vent as loose as it is on its Mark I's, which included the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear station. So when the station blackout occurred on March 11th, 2011, we were immediately concerned that this was the precursor to the accident that we feared could literally blow the roof off these reactors. And in fact, that's when we were called into CNN studios here in Washington, D.C., on the afternoon of 2:30 of March 11th, that's exactly what we told CNN, and that's what they captured. And unfortunately, this is exactly what played out in the days following the great earthquake and tsunami there in eastern Japan.
Now, last year, the NRC had some hearings about the safety of the Mark I design, which I understand were a result of a petition started by yourself, but perhaps you can tell us more about the process of what NRC was looking at and what they've so far concluded.
Well, the accident at Fukushima essentially set off its own tsunami of concern within the nuclear industry and the regulators that nuclear power, in fact, was vulnerable. That, you know, nuclear accidents happen, and in fact, they can happen in highly technological societies, and with devastating results and consequences that are long-lasting. And this basically undermined the credibility of the whole technology of nuclear power worldwide. So the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the nuclear industry basically began a process of damage control here in the United States, was already trying to revive an all but moribund new construction of reactors, and also to continue the license extensions of these aging and deteriorating reactors. So President Obama and the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission started a near-term task force that would look at the consequences of the Fukushima reactor for nuclear power plants here in the United States. And we simultaneously filed an emergency enforcement petition through the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission requesting emergency enforcement actions, basically to revoke the operating license, well, to suspend the operating licenses of the Mark I's, pending a review and the revocation of these dangerous reactors. So that was in April 13th, 2011, that we filed that petition. And we had a series of petition review board hearings with the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And on in December of 2011, the NRC said that we could, they would be taking up several of the issues for further review, which includes revoking the pre-approval of the voluntary installation of these venting systems, and also looking at requiring the Mark I to install backup emergency power systems on these elevated spent fuel storage ponds that sit atop and outside of primary containment, and contain, in our case here in the United States, hundreds of tons of high-level nuclear waste. Where, for example, Fukushima Daiichi Unit 1 had 50 metric tons of nuclear waste sitting in this fuel pool that is 6 to 10 stories high, or 60 to 100 feet up in the reactor building at the Oyster Creek Nuclear Power Plant, which is just 60 miles south of New York City. There are 750 metric tons of high-level nuclear waste sitting in the same configuration, only in very dense, packed, tight, what we believe to be, several times the original design capacity for these plants, many times over the design capacity, and represents clearly a much larger source term, radioactive inventory that would represent an environmental threat to not just the emergency planning zone, but in the entire eastern seaboard. So, we're in the middle of fostering a campaign here in the United States that basically is looking to mobilize communities around these Mark I's here in the United States to begin a campaign to revoke these operating licenses and, you know, basically draw attention to the work of citizens groups that are already underway in states like Vermont.
Right. And as I understand, that campaign is called Freeze Our Fukushimas. It's a national campaign launched by Beyond Nuclear to permanently suspend operations at the Mark I boiling water reactors in the United States. So tell us about that campaign and what it involves and where it's going from here.
Well, you know, basically in the process of petitioning the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, we had more than 8,000 individuals co-sign the petition with us. So, you know, this we basically have started a network around the Mark I's operating in the United States that will look to mobilize the public. I think that it's important to look at what's going on in Vermont, in New England, as a model for what we see possible around every Mark I, not only here in the United States, but in the world. The state of Vermont has voted in its legislature that it is no longer in the public good for the Vermont Yankee Mark I reactor to operate beyond its current license of 40 years, which expires on March 21st, 2012. So, however, although the state has said that it's no longer in the public interest, the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission has provided Entergy, the operator of Vermont Yankee, with a 20-year extension to go 20 years beyond March 21st, 2012. So the what we've got now is a state decision looking at self-determination for energy policy versus a federal decision that is a proponent of nuclear power. And these are now in legal contest. A district court judge basically said that the state of Vermont could not impose its judgment over the safety judgment of the Federal Nuclear Regulatory Commission, but the state's concerns are much broader than just safety. But the issue of nuclear waste, the integrity of the operating company. But so, you know, there is an awareness already that these Mark I's are an antiquated design, that nuclear power in and of itself is not a democratic process. You can look at any stage of the nuclear fuel chain and see where the industry and its political champions are imposing their will and their corporate design over the public, from indigenous peoples in uranium mining areas all the way to, you know, eminent domain to claim national sacrifice areas for nuclear waste disposal. But at each of these levels, nuclear power proves to be not only dangerous, but anti-democratic. So through the process of public education, petitioning, public hearings, basically demonstrations, letters to the editor, a whole range of direct actions. We're looking to mobilize public opposition to the continued operation of what we believe to be a very dangerous subset of an already inherently dangerous technology. So we believe that, in fact, as far as the nuclear power issue goes, the Mark I nuclear power plants, these are the reactors that should be shut down essentially overnight.
And as I understand, the next phase of the campaign will include something called the March Against Nuclear Madness that's going to be taking place around the globe. Perhaps you can tell us about that.
Well, there are activities all across the United States and around the world that are acting in solidarity with the people of Japan who are now faced with the long-term risks and threats from the radioactive fallout and radioactive discharges that have gone into the ocean. These activities range basically from educating yourself, your neighbors, your community, to mobilizing into nonviolent direct actions and nonviolent civil disobedience even, at some of these reactor sites, with an emphasis on, again, mobilizing around the not only the in solidarity with the people of Japan, but in solidarity with the people and the state of Vermont, who are really setting the precedent here in the United States for the prompt and early closure of this antiquated design, namely the General Electric Boiling Water Reactor. So you can go to our website at www.beyondnuclear.org and on our Freeze Our Fukushimas page, you can see that, beginning in March, there are daily additions to these public actions that are organizing not only in Vermont, but in many states and even overseas that are looking at, now is the time to direct a energy policy for the 21st century that is neither dependent on fossil fuel or fissile fuel. So it's, we're looking to, begin a democratic process for self-determination of a carbon-free, nuclear-free energy policy.
All right. Well, on that note, I will leave things there. Paul Gunter, beyondnuclear.org. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.